Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. With a flu shot unreliable this year, a particularly virulent form of the flu circulating and antiviral drug stockpiles dwindling, the best medicine is preventive medicine to bolster our immune defenses. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Seasonal Immune Support Protocol, my supplement recommendations offering the greatest boost for your immune system when it's needed most. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information. And for a limited time, you'll get 10% off and free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's podcast is a solo exercise, no guests, just me alone, up against the world, you, the audience, and all manner of observers, peering eyes. It's a potpourri of stories that ended up on the cutting room floor during our weekend program, because it's a very busy program. And sometimes we get a lot of callers, and we can't squeeze everything in. And so I just have so much information that I want to share with you, and comments on some of the news that I decided to introduce. From time to time, you'll hear this, a potpourri broadcast. So kind of a mixed bag of stories that are important. And the first story that I want to tackle, I want to take issue once again with a story in the esteemed New York Times, which is entitled A Perfect Storm for Broken Bones. You may have seen it, February 12th, 2018. And before I get into it, you know, let me just say that I'm really surprised because, you know, the New York Times has a kind of a consumer advocacy orientation. It's progressive. It stands up for the little guy. But too often, the New York Times locksteps and parrots the party line of Big Pharma. And this is an instance, I would say usually reliable, but I would qualify that by saying the sometimes reliable health reporter Jane Brody falls hook, line, and sinker for the Big Pharma paradigm of managing osteoporosis. And so let me just read you from the article. It's called A Perfect Storm for Broken Bones. A, quote, perfect storm threatens to derail the progress that has been made in protecting the bone health of Americans. As an aside, I might say, well, what progress? Well, is the progress all attributable to the wonderful medications that we've been giving people? She writes, as the population over 50 swells, fewer adults at risk of advanced bone loss and fractures are undergoing tests for bone density, resulting in a decline in the diagnosis and treatment of osteoporosis, even for people who have already broken bones. And if this trend is not reversed, and soon, by better educating people with osteoporosis and their doctors, the result could be devastating, spawning an epidemic of broken bones, medical office visits, hospital and nursing home admissions, and even premature deaths. Currently, many people at risk of a fracture, and I continue to read from the Times article, I'm quoting, and often their doctors are failing to properly weigh the benefits of treating fragile bones against the very rare but widely publicized hazards of bone-preserving drugs, experts say. So what she's saying essentially is that, you know, these medications, they're very effective, and not enough people are being evaluated for the use of these medications. And this resistance has developed to the use of these potent and safe drugs for scant reason. The side effects are rare, the downsides are minimal, and the effectiveness is so well documented that we really need to jump on board with a campaign to increase awareness about osteoporosis. What she says here is that there's been a reversal in what had been a decade and a half long decline in hip fractures, according to a new study. More women are now being hospitalized with osteoporotic hip fractures. And according to Jane Brody, the only inference that can be made is that people aren't taking their medications, or maybe they're not getting tested. They simply are unaware that they have osteoporosis, and we're losing the battle against osteoporosis. She quotes an individual, Dr. Michael Lewicki, quote, about 80% of patients with a hip fracture are never treated for osteoporosis. Well, I'm not sure if that's entirely correct. But one doctor calls this a crisis in the treatment of osteoporosis. And basically they leave you the impression that we're just not giving people enough medications. So what they miss in this, in looking at this study, is there could be other factors that may cause older women to get hip fractures besides not taking medication. I mean, this is just an inference. They think, well, if they took medication, they wouldn't be getting hip fractures. But other factors may be involved, such as increasingly fatter Americans, increasingly sedentary Americans, increasing number of Americans who are on multiple medications, which make them dizzy and may cause them to fall, overuse of sedatives in older women, and even the opioid epidemic, which may affect older adults who suffer from pain. They may become disoriented and fall, or they may, less exercise. That's part of the problem too. Any one of these hypotheses is equally valid as compared to the hypothesis that not enough people are getting medications. So, this is an example of what some people call disease mongering. And I'll read you a critique of this study that I find particularly compelling. There's an outfit called Health News Reviews. And by the way, they're not holistically oriented. They're not on the side of vitamins. They're not like a Dr. Mercola type website or an intelligent medicine website. They just review the reportage of health issues in the media, sometimes with a bit of a skeptical eye. And so what they're saying here, and the author is Alan Castles. He's a pharmaceutical policy researcher at the University of Victoria in British Columbia. And he writes a rebuttal to Jane Brody entitled A Perfect Storm for Broken Bones or for Disease Mongering of Osteoporosis. And he writes, last week in the New York Times, Jane Brody predicted, quote, a perfect storm for broken bones, but the column has elements of a perfect storm of disease mongering. She writes that fewer adults at risk of advanced bone loss and fractures are undergoing tests for bone density, resulting in a decline in the diagnosis and treatment, as I said earlier. He writes, Brody's column promotes the idea that more drug treatment is required when, in fact, almost everything about osteoporosis is the subject of intense debate. For example, the link between bone density and fracture risk. That's not entirely proven. And he cites studies that show that, many things may seem to increase bone density, but do they really reduce fracture risk? Another controversy, the usefulness of the test for low bone density. The role of the pharmaceutical industry in reconceptualizing risks as disease. In other words, taking what is basically a physiological condition, which is reduced bone density as you age, and turning it into a disease for which there is a convenient drug remedy. And what he writes as the notorious expanding disease definitions which contribute to overdiagnosis, as well as the marketing of drugs, often of minimal benefit and evidence of substantial harm. Now, he doesn't just make these accusations. Each of these items is footnoted with studies that suggest, for example, that many medications are of minimal benefit. Some medications have substantial harm, not just very rare occasional side effects. He says that the single biggest factor blamed on this leveling of hip fracture rates is fear of the adverse effects of osteoporosis drugs. And he says that those fears actually, to some extent, are justified, because longer-term use of bisphosphonates, that would be Beneva, and that would be Fosamax, and that would be, that whole category, Actonel as well, that category of medications, that they increase one's risk of developing an atypical fracture of the femur or thigh bone the longer you take them. And also, there's osteonecrosis of the jaw, which admittedly is relatively uncommon. But he cites a journal article entitled "Osteoporosis: The Emperor Has No Clothes." And this is a critical review article by a Finnish MD, PhD. He's an orthopedic surgeon at the University of Helsinki in Finland. And Dr. Järvinen and his colleagues write that the evidence supporting the use of bone-targeting drugs to prevent hip fractures is kind of limited. It seems to work best for women between 65 and 80 with established osteoporosis, but there's meager proof that drugs help women over 80 or men at any age. And certainly there's minimal proof that using these drugs before you develop osteoporosis, that when you have just merely osteopenia, is justified. So he also points out, I'm talking about the guy in Health News Review, he points out that if you look at the journal article that the Times bases its story on, there's some problems, because you kind of have to look for the money trail. Most of the authors of that journal article, on which the Jane Brody column is based, turns out they have deep financial connections to a wide range of osteoporosis drug makers. One is a paid data analysis for the International Society for Clinical Densitometry. And by the way, I'm not the one who uncovered this. I give full credit to Alan Castles, who's the policy researcher at University of Victoria. He dug this information up. He did a little homework, and he said, what's the background on the people who say that we've got a problem here with, not enough screening and not enough treatment? Another is a consultant for Amgen. One has received institutional grant research support from Amgen, consultant for Pfizer. One has received research grants from Amgen, Lilly, and Merck, and served on scientific advisory boards for Amgen, Merck, and Radius. Another is on scientific advisory boards for a variety of pharmaceutical firms, Lilly, Merck, all the usual subjects. And by the way, some of these guys consult for the testing companies, the companies that make the equipment, like Hologic and Radius. These are companies that make a lot of money with the selling equipment to doctors to do the screening. So they certainly have a ulterior motive for promoting screening. Now, what's interesting is that I seldom do this, but I thought it might be interesting to read the letters or the comments section after this article, because the Times offers comments from readers. And it's interesting because the comments were almost uniformly negative. There were about 275 comments on the article, "A Perfect Storm for Broken Bones" by Jane Brody. And I'll just give you a sampling, give you a flavor of what these articles were like. I mean, what these comments were like. Reading this article disappointed me deeply. I am concerned that both the author and the New York Times are passing on data provided by studies done for the explicit purpose of selling more drugs. Here's another comment. It's really not worth reading Jane Brody's columns, since one can find the same point of view in the barrage of big pharma marketing to which we're subjected. Here's another one. I was disturbed by Jane Brody's article and felt she was simply writing for the drug companies, not sharing a true overall picture. And there were many comments from individuals who had been on these medications, had still experienced fractures, people who had experienced serious side effects from the medications, which Jane Brody would say is rare, but out there are a lot of people lurking who have experienced the side effects. I've seen many of them in my practice. And if I've seen maybe, you know, 1,000 or 1,500 patients with osteoporosis at best. I mean, it's limited how much experience a doctor can have with a condition. I've seen, you know, perhaps several dozen patients who've experienced really serious side effects. So this is a problem. So I did a little digging, and I came up with a variety of articles. I'm actually going to write this up for our newsletter, so you'll get the references in the newsletter. But one article that I came across was a review article on osteoporosis medications. And it concluded as follows. After decades of widespread use, effectiveness of drugs for osteoporosis remains uncertain, yet adverse effects are more apparent. Without well-designed large trials that measure clinically relevant outcomes over prolonged follow-up periods, we may wait 30 years to find out that a drug has no net benefit. Meanwhile, millions of people are being exposed to drugs for which we do not understand the benefit-to-harm ratio. So there really is a lot of pushback and controversy about this. I came across an article in Our Bodies, Ourselves. It was a blog. And it was a critique of osteoporosis as a disease and related drug concerns, 2009. They say that osteoporosis is a major public health threat because it's currently estimated that 44 million Americans, 68% of whom are women, will have an osteoporosis-related fracture in their lifetime. That's one out of every two women and one out of in four men age 50. But they say we're often overlooked in discussions of the condition. However, questions related to the efficacy and potential harms of the tests and treatments used to measure and prevent bone loss. So, I mean, yeah, it's a problem, but are we on the right track? And they note that in the April issue of the American Journal of Nursing, which is not a firebrand, you know, journal by any means, it's pretty mainstream, they include a piece called The Marketing of Osteoporosis, which comments on the promotion of drugs to symptom-free women for bone fracture prevention. And that basically is the, you know, the thrust of the direct consumer ads, you know, with Sally Fields, basically making you feel fragile. And there's actually a satire of that that was once on a pretty famous satire that was on Saturday Night Live. And I'll post that when I do the newsletter article. It's a hoot. It's really funny because the actress who portrays Sally Field is basically trying to tell women that they may feel good, but their bones can crumble into chalk, you know, at the slightest instigation. And it really kind of fortifies the notion of fragility and creates fear. And then women line up and dutifully take their medications. But author Marianne Napoli, who of the Center for Medical Consumer, she's been around a long time. I've interviewed her several times for Intelligent Medicine, consumer advocate. She says, quote, in the name of prevention, millions of Americans have accepted the idea that it's reasonable to treat a risk factor such as bone loss or high cholesterol as if it were a disease. More people should question the wisdom of starting long-term drug therapy. Often the magnitude of the risk factor has been overestimated or the danger of the disease itself exaggerated by people trying to sell you something, like a drug that you must take for the rest of your life. And she describes how what was once thought to be a risk factor, which is bone loss, came to be thought of as a disease for which there's medication, for which, you know, there's support by the government and Medicare and insurance companies. You know, they all bought in, and the New York Times, of course, is rushing to fortify that message very slavishly. Yeah, so, I mean, for example, and this, I actually see this in my medical journals, there was a glossy ad campaign that ran in the Annals of Internal Medicine featuring a thin, svelte, 40-something white woman with a crumbling ancient stone column in the background, quote, don't wait for a fracture, no matter what her degree of osteoporotic bone loss. And so Marianne Napoli actually wrote, she took the time to write to the editor-in-chief of the Annals of Internal Medicine, pointing out that Fosamax, which was the ad being promoted, which is the drug being promoted, had no proven benefit in women in early middle age or in those without a history of fracture. She says, I never received a reply, but the journal did stop running the ad about 6 months later. So, you know, this is a problem. And, you know, what we're seeing to some extent is industry propaganda. So this next story is an example of the law of unintended consequences, because we're trying to save money. We're trying to save our medical system by trimming costs, by making hospitals more effective and more efficient. So they passed the Affordable Care Act, and the Affordable Care Act has a lot of provisions, among which are some provisions which are designed to reduce unnecessary admissions of patients, or to improve the care of patients in hospitals. So when they don't, if they're not treated properly in the hospital, often they bounce back, they come back to the hospital. So the idea is, let's create an incentive, or actually in this case, a disincentive, a penalty, so that if you send a patient home and the patient immediately has to come back, you get penalized. Okay? So, I mean, it sounds reasonable, right? You know, you want to take really super good care of the patient, give them really good instructions, you know, when they get home, because sometimes they, you know, kick people out of the hospital too quickly, and they don't give them the proper instructions, the proper care, so they end up bouncing back. So they want people to just go home and not have to come back. Totally makes sense, right? Well, here's the law of unintended consequences. New research shows that that penalty is associated with fewer readmissions, but also higher rates of death among patients with heart failure. Because there was a disincentive, you know, they said, don't bring them back because, I mean, yeah, they're pretty sick, but please don't bring them back because the hospital is going to be penalized. So they wanted to lower readmission rates. It was seen as a worthy goal for improving patient care during the initial admission and during follow-up care. Right? Because they have outpatient care. The outpatient care is supposed to prevent you from coming back to the hospital. But the problem was when they made it harder for patients to get back to the hospital, when they actually did get really sick, more of them died. So, you know, this is the problem with these policies. You know, they create these policies on high, and then it's the law of unintended consequences. You know, when they're translated to reality in the real world, it just doesn't quite pan out. So, that's part of the problem. You know, now these days there are more bureaucrats in medicine than there are caregivers. And that equation has changed radically since when I began my career in medicine. More and more people are looking over our shoulders telling us we shouldn't be doing. It's not in the interest of patients to have guidelines determine when patients are appropriately treated. Okay, this is a good point at which to pause, because we divide these podcasts into two parts. In part two, we're going to share more of our important health stories with you, stories that didn't make it to our weekend broadcast and that I really, really, really want to share with you.